Okay, welcome everyone. We're going to get started. I need these so I can read what's in front of me. My name is Jeannie Mainland, and I'm a financial professional at Prudential. I'll be your MC for today's session. I'm thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders from across this state and this community. Prudential is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Watermark Conference for Women for the first time ever. The conference offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer marketing. The entire day is devoted to your empowerment and to inspire you to make your mark in your communities, careers, and companies. And that sense of commitment is important to Prudential as well. That commitment is still true for us as we work to make financial security attainable for everyone. When there's your belief and your inspiration, you cannot discount the role of women who are increasingly the breadwinners of our households. We recently completed what we call the Financial Wellness Census and one of the most comprehensive surveys of the financial health of Americans. Not surprisingly, we found that more than half of women are the primary breadwinners in their households. The wage gap is driving a confidence gap that we will all not be able to meet our financial goals. We are making less money, but we have more burdens, more worries, and ultimately more stress. And that's why we're here today. Make sure to stop by our Prudential booth and take a future selfie. And remember, #PrueEmpowers. So I'm delighted that you are joining us today for this breakout session, Budget for Life with Tiffany Alice. And we're going to have an amazing hour in store for you. Now I'm excited to introduce Tiffany. Tiffany, a.k.a. the Budgetnista, has been giving financial education for over 10 years now. She's a best-selling author of the book The 1 Week Budget and Live Richer Challenge. She and her advice have been featured on TV and in print. She shares her knowledge through her website, thebudgetnista.com, and on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Not only does she blog on her website, but also for the Huffington Post and the U.S. News and World Report at The Budgetnista. Please welcome Tiffany.
Thank you. Is my mic on? It is. Can you guys hear me? Hey, hey, hey. So I actually used to be a preschool teacher for 10 years, so I'm about to get live in here. You ready? Okay. So I don't know why, but I'm obsessed with budgeting. I love talking about money. I'm really fortunate in that I find it kind of fun. And so I like to make it fun for you. So today we're going to talk about the 7 steps to living a richer life. Who would like to live a little bit richer? Okay, and for those of you who didn't raise your hand, you can give me your money. Okay, let's get started. So I like to do a little icebreaker, and because I want to know who's in the audience. And so as Jeannie mentioned, my nickname is the Budgetnista. My baby sister, Lisa, gave me that nickname because she was like, you know the fashionista? And I was like, yeah. She was like, that's not you. You're the budgetnista. And so the budgetnista stuck because honestly, I've always been really good at budgeting, good at managing my money. And so it's a reflection of how I feel about my finances. So maybe it's just a few people, if you can tell me, if you had a financial nickname, what would it be and why? Like I said, I used to be a school teacher, so I have no problem pointing out to people who are hiding and not wanting to answer questions. All right? So anybody want to share? If you had a financial nickname, what would it be and why? Yes. You'd be what?
Frugal.
Frugal. Why?
Well, I just
spent
$75
She said she just went to Starbucks and they tried to charge her $2.79 for a pack of Tic Tacs, but she opted for the non-name brand at $1.14. That is indeed frugal, my lady. Yes. Anybody else? Financial nickname? Yes.
Money magical thinker.
Money magical thinker. How so? Why?
Because when I check my bank balance each day, I
still
look at
the 8-ball of money, right? Okay. Okay, money magical thinker. Yes, we've all been there. Where we're like, big money, big money, big money. Or we look at our bank account. Anybody else want to share? Yes. Impulse. Why? Okay, she says if she wants something, she works hard for her money, so she might as well buy it. All right, one more person. What would your, yes.
Prudent Hootie.
Okay, Prudent Hootie. Ooh, okay, I like that. Miss Prudence. Okay. So, before you can do anything with your finances, it is critical that you create a budget. You can take a picture of this if you want with your phone so you have it. This is your quick four-step budget plan. Step number one, list everything that you spend money on. This is called your money list, right? So that means not just bills. Do you get your hair done? Do you get your nails done? Grocery shopping, hanging out with the girls, entertainment, everything. Step two, write down what you spend on each item on your money list. Write down what you spent monthly. So I want to see, and I want you to see, a monthly picture of money in, money out. So you have your money list, you have your list, but how much are you spending monthly versus how much are you getting monthly? So step three is add up your expenses on your money list. And so that's super easy. You know, you have your money list, you have all of your expenses listed, you have how much you spend monthly. So let's just say it's the water bill and you pay every 3 months and it's $90 on average. That's 3 months divided by 90, that's $30 a month. Let's say you eat out for lunch and you do about 3 days a week or twice a week and it's $10 each time about. That's two times $10, that's $20 a week, times 4 weeks in a month, that's $80 in a month. So the monthly amount. So like I said, step three, add up your money list. And step four, I call this the tears and tissue step, right? Because this is when you're like, wait a minute, where is my money, right? This is when you've already added up your money list, you're going to subtract it from your take-home pay. That's why we call it the tears and tissue step, because you might find that you're negative. So here's one of two things. You're going to either find that you're negative, or you're going to find that the paper says there's money left over, but your bank account says otherwise, right? Because the paper might say, hey, there's an extra $300 a month, but your bank account is saying, where, right? But this is at least the beginning step of a four-step budget. You guys can do this, right? Got it? You can say, got it. Got it, okay, yes. So we're gonna talk about the seven ways to live a richer life. Way numero uno, it is money mindset. Every financial choice matters. Can you guess who that lovely young lady who's not smiling is? It's me. Yes, this is me about age 9. This is how old I was when I made about my first financial choice. And I'm not smiling because it's also my first year in Catholic school. And no, in public school. Up until then, I had gone to Catholic school. And on picture day in Catholic school, you got dressed up. Because why would your parents want pictures of you in regular clothes? Apparently, the heathens in public school, they wear their regular clothes. No one told 9-year-old Tiffany. So here I come in my Sunday's best, and I'm embarrassed because everyone behind the camera is teasing me. So this is why my face is like this. But I just wanted to show you a picture of how old I was when I made my first financial choice. And before I tell you a little bit more about that choice, why it's so important that you as women and the handful of men, it's so important for you to understand your finances is because that you make up to 70% of the financial choices in your household. This is actually from a study from Prudential. Up to 70%. So even if, let's just say your partner makes more than you. Say, let's just say you're married and you're married to your husband, right? And so if you like a car and he hates the car, are you getting the car? Yes. Right? If he loves the car and you hate the car, are you getting the car? No. You make up to 70% of the financial choices in your household, whether you make the money or not. So that's why it's so critical that you're here. All right, so money mindset. My 9-year-old self, my first lesson, I wanted a bike for my 10-year-old birthday, right? So I was asking my dad is a CFO and an accountant, it's where I first started my financial lessons. And I said, Daddy, I would like a bike for my birthday. He was doing the bills at the dining room table. Probably not the best time to ask for something. My mom was giving me the symbols and, you know, like, I was like, I don't know what that means. I want a bike. So I used to ride my sister's bike and I was ready to move on and to get a bike for my birthday. This is the bike that I really wanted. Remember those bikes back in the day? Big old basket, the tassels, you know? It was a little bigger than this, but I wanted this bike for my birthday. And my dad, my parents were both born in Nigeria. So I'm Nigerian-American, and so I have an African name. It's Adochi. And so I know I'm in trouble when they use the African name, right? And my dad said, Adochi. My dad, even though, anybody have parents from another country? Right? No matter how many years they're here, it still sounds like they just got here yesterday, right? So my dad said, Adochi, so you want a bike? You want a bike for your birthday? I was like, uh-oh, this doesn't sound good.
He said, okay, well, if you want a bike, you have to help me pay some bills. And I was like, oh, man, I knew this wasn't going to end well. But what he really meant was he wanted me to do that, the four-step budget that I just showed you. He wanted me to add up the family's expenses. He wanted me to subtract it from what they made. He already had it written, so I really was just adding it on a calculator and subtract it from what he and my mom made every month. And the truth is, I didn't know if they made a lot or a little, but I did know the number started off here, and after I subtracted all of our expenses, it was here. And I thought, great, there goes my bike. And what he told me was there is money left over, but some of it has to be saved, some of it has to be invested, and then some of it can be used for things like your bike. So it was kind of like my first money lesson. And so even though I wanted this bike, I kind of forecast it forward for the first time, and I made a thoughtful financial choice. I realized if I get this bike, what happens when you get something when you're 9 and it's just your size? What happens when you're 10? You grow out of it. So for the first time, I thought about it. I said, well, now that I see all that I have to go through in order to get a bike, if I get this bike that's just my size, when I get older, I'm going to grow out of it. So instead, I opted for Big Blue Ugly. Now, I didn't think it was Big Blue Ugly. The kids at school did. And so I rode this bike in middle school, high school. I was on the tennis team when I was in high school, rode this bike to practice. All my jobs as a teenager, rode this bike. My younger sister rode it to deliver papers. Freshman year, you know, you gain 15, 20, 35 pounds. I rode this bike to lose weight freshman year of college. My dad is retired and still rides this bike. So I got this bike when I was 11 years old. You know, now I am 38, so 27 years later, and this bike is still relevant. Because what? Number one lesson, every financial choice matters, right? So you tell yourself, oh, it's just eating out every once in a while. It's your blue bike. Oh, it's just, you know, I don't know, putting the vacation on my credit card. Nope, it's your blue bike. What financial choices are following you into the future that seem like not the big deal? But they're keeping you where you are now. What is your blue bike? I want you to think about that. What is your blue bike? Okay, got it? Yes. Got it, okay. All right, number two, money mindset. Need it, love it, like it, want it. These are the four questions you're gonna ask yourself before you buy anything, right? Anything. I wanna hear you guys say it. Need it.
Need it.
Love it.
Love it.
Like it.
Like it.
Want it. One more time. Need it. Love it. Yes. Okay. It's like a little chant. Need it. Love it. Like it. Want it. You didn't know it was MC Budgetista, right? So need it. Give me an example of a need. Food. Shelter.
Yes.
Who said shoes? I heard you. I've got bionic preschool teacher ears. I'm like, I heard you. It's like clothes to be covered, not to be cute. Right? Medicine, right? Transportation if you need to get to your job, right? So your needs come first. And most of us take care of our needs because you're here, right? So needs are things that you need to maintain life, to maintain health, right? So we take care of our needs first when we think about our money. What about our love? So who's our keynote at lunch? Serena Williams, right? So this is how you think about what your loves are. If you had Serena Williams' bank account, right? What would you do or what would you do more of? Travel, it's always the number one thing I hear from women. What else? Shop, what else? Scholarships, make scholarships, what else? Real estate. So typically what I hear when people tell me about their loves is experiences over things. You notice when you start thinking big about your money, you start thinking about experiences over things, but why is it when it's time to spend your money, you spend more money on things versus experiences? Right? Well, it's because experiences sometimes are a little bit more expensive. They take a little bit more patience to save up for. But if you were to follow this, do I need it? Do I love it? And if not, it's merely a like or want. And likes or wants are okay, but are they robbing you of your needs and your loves? Are you fast-fooding away your trip to Paris? Right? Are you coffee in the morning away your ability to create a scholarship for someone? You know what I mean? So it's not about living less of a life. I think people think that budgeting and being mindful of your money means living less of a life? No. When you focus on your needs and your loves first, really you're living more of a life. I'll give you an example. I remember I was, so my friend's girlfriend used to go to brunch every single weekend. And it was like $30 or $40. And I was like, I'm not really a bruncher, you know? And so my friend Tawanda, I remember, I was saving my money and I went on my first solo trip. I went to New Mexico. I really wanted to go to Albuquerque because I wanted, it's the hot air balloon capital of the world. And I wanted to see it, you know, for the first time. And so I went and she called me and she said, hey, the girls and I are going to brunch, but we all know, Tiffany, you don't go to brunch because you're so cheap. And I was like, actually, I'm actually in a hot, because I live in New Jersey. I'm actually in a hot air balloon right now, and the captain said that we have to turn off our phones. Can I call you later? She's like, hot air balloon? You were just in Jersey yesterday. I said, this is where my brunch money goes. Gotta go. And so, needless to say, she wanted to be in a hot air balloon the next time. So it doesn't mean that you don't brunch, but I want you to put your finances toward what means more to you. Some of you are using your money towards someone else's idea of love. You see, you're not going on vacation because you're spending your money on their Paris or their brunch or their whatever that looks like, you know? So I want you to be mindful of that. Do I need it? Do I love it? Do I like it? Do I want it? I actually have hundreds of these. These are reminders. So like I said, I used to be a school teacher, so I'm really big on visual reminders. So I brought a ton with me. I'll have them with me at the when I sign books in the main hall or convention hall. So you can come get one and put it on your money-spending hand. Right? So every time you spend money, you're looking at it like, oh, I want you to see this face. Like, what are you doing? What are you? This doesn't look like Paris. This looks like a clothing store, which is cute if you don't want to go to Paris. You know? So come and get one so I can remind you. Okay? All right. Number three, separate to see. It's not just for relationships. Right? Sometimes you need to separate yourself to really see what's going on with your money. The best separation you could do with your money is to separate a spending account from your bills account. So at the same bank, most of you already have a regular checking account, right, where you get your, where you deposit your paycheck, and it's attached to your debit card. That's fine. At that same bank, I challenge you to also have a separate checking account specifically for bills, right? And I want it to be one way in, one way out. Every 2 weeks, every week, every month, however often you get paid, you're going to take money from your regular account that you currently have, and you're gonna put it into this bills account. And the only way for it to leave that bills account is to pay a bill. I used to be the overdraft queen. I mean, some of you guys are overdraft princesses in here. I can tell, it's okay, right? It's because all of your money's in one pot. So like if every, I feel like every culture has like a pot food, so I think like if you're Spanish, it's like paella. If you're from New Orleans, it's like gumbo. You know, and so like for me being Nigerian, it's jollof rice. That means you have the starch, the meat, and the vegetable all in one pot. That's really great for food, terrible for money. You know, you got your savings in the same account as your bills, as your spending, as your this, as your that, and it's hard to tell what's going on. So you want to separate your money. Have a separate account for your spending and a separate account for your bills, because if you have a separate bills account, what will happen is that you can automate your bill payments out of that account. That helped me from overdrafting so much. Because when you pay your bills on time, regularly, that will account for 35% of your credit score. So especially if you automate your bill payments, that means not only you're paying your bills on time, but you're also gonna positively affect your credit score. And you're less likely to overdraft, because once the money goes in your bills account, you know that money's specifically for a bill. So separating to see is gonna be your best friend. Got it? Good. All right, money buckets. So money buckets is all about saving. So many of us, I don't know if you can tell, I'm a storyteller, preschool. But then we're going to get to money buckets. So I want you to think about, do you guys get squirrels out here? Because I always wonder. Get squirrels? Yeah. I mean, some places don't get squirrels. Don't be, you know. I went to Nigeria, they had lizards. No squirrels, right? So I want you to imagine that a squirrel is the best saver possible. We, unfortunately, could take a lesson from a squirrel, right? So in New Jersey, we get really bad winters. And in the fall and in the spring, squirrels are out and about gathering acorns, right? And then in the winter, what do squirrels do? They hibernate, right? So why do squirrels work the hardest in the fall and the spring? Why? Because what? Right? So they can survive the winter. Also, too, that's the time when there's more like acorns and whatever it is they collect, right, on the ground. There's all the acorns, right? So when things are in abundance, I'm like, you might want to, because I'm a little loud. I'm like, I hear a little feedback. And when things are in abundance, squirrels save the most, work the hardest. See where I'm going? It's time for you to bring up the mirror of shame. When things are in abundance, squirrels work the hardest and save the most. When things are tightest, right, squirrels spend the least and do the least. We are the opposite. Let you get a raise. Let alone money come to your pocket. Oh, it's party time. Yes. You get a drink and you get a drink and a sweater for everyone, right? When things are in abundance, we spend the most and chill the most because it's money time, right? But when things are really tight, that's when we're like, I gotta work so hard. I gotta put in all this effort. There's no acorns to be had, you know? So I want you to think to yourself, I'm going to be like the squirrel. When finances are really good and I'm making the most amount of money, so you can think about this as retirement, right? You can think about this as just like pre-recession, because there's always going to be a financial winter coming. That's just how life is. It's cyclical. Squirrels understand that the acorns that they collect in the fall are not just for the fall. They're for the winter as well. The money you make when things are good is not just for good times. It's for the bad times that are going to come. Bad times come. We're adults. It happens. It's okay. But if you work the hardest and save the most, you'll be able to ride out the bad times till the good times hit again. So we're going to be like the what? Exactly. Good. All right, money buckets. Let's get to money buckets. Savings. So when I was in seventh grade, we used to do this experiment where if it was going to rain, the teacher would say, let's put out a bucket and put a ruler in it, and then in the morning we could see how many inches that it rained. Why put out a bucket? Why not just take the ruler and stick it into the ground and see how much water is next to the ruler? Why put out a bucket? To hold the water, right? Because if there's no bucket, what's going to happen to the water? It's going to seep into the ground. You, my friend, are the ground. No matter how much money sometimes you get thrown at you, seep it up. Somebody's like, I feel seen. You should. I've been here, and sometimes I'm still here, right? No matter how much money is thrown our way, we will soak it up like the ground. If you don't put out a bucket, you're not going to keep some of it. So the best place for a bucket is an online-only savings account. Right? So I love online-only savings accounts because it makes your money inconvenient and inconvenient money gets saved. So let's just say you have your regular bank account, we talked about earlier, where you have your bills account. Bills account, by the way, with no debit card attached. You do not want to have a debit card attached to your bills account because you're not going to pay your bills with your debit card. You're going to pay it automatically online. So you're going to have your bills account and your spending account at the same brick-and-mortar bank. That's fine. And then having an online-only bank account and an online-only bank, what's so great about an online-only bank, they don't have the brick and mortar support, so they have a lot of extra money in comparison to a regular bank as they pass that savings on to you via paying out interest. So at a regular bank right now, a major one that we all know, right now they're paying out 0.001%, basically a piece of a penny. Is how much you're earning in interest, right? But at an online-only bank, right now they're ranging anywhere from 2 to 3%. So 2 to 3 pennies, you know? Still better than a regular brick and mortar. So if you save your money at an online-only bank, you're gonna earn higher interest. And on top of that, because it's online, you can't easily go to the ATM to get your money. You're not gonna get a debit card because you're not gonna open a checking account there, just an online-only savings account. So me, I love Target. Right? I love Target. I just do. Right? So I can go to Target. Hey, Target, I want that dress. Then I look at my bank account, my checking account at my brick and mortar bank. My checking account says, how? There's nothing here. Right? Normally, younger Tiffany would say, you know who does have money? My savings account at the same bank. And before they can even swipe my card, I'm literally making the transfer for my phone. We've all been there like, hold on. Transfer. Got the dress, right? Now, unless I'm willing to sleep at Target, for 24 hours, that's how long it takes to get your money back, I'm not getting the dress. Because if my savings is at my online-only bank, it's about a 24-hour wait. That means no more impulse buying. Because the truth is, I'm not as disciplined as you would think. I'm not. So instead, I kind of hide my money from myself in an online-only bank. I do, because I'm like, ooh, I want to get it. 24 hours, never mind. Ooh, I want to get that. 24 hours, never mind. And what I love about online-only banks is that you can have as many bank accounts as you want. I have one for a car, one for a house. You could have a winter clothes shopping online-only bank account. You can name them. That's what's so great about them. You can name them. And so it's just a great way to separate your money from yourself, to hide it from yourself, and to force yourself to use it for what it's intended for, because there's not going to be any impulse buying with money that you have to wait for. Got it? Good. All right. Credit. Let's talk about making your credit jump like Jordan. I know all the young ones like LeBron, but I, in my late 30s, I grew up on Michael Jordan, right? So making your credit score jump like Jordan. This helped me significantly because at one point, my credit score, I bought my first house, I was 25, and my credit score fell. Well, I had an 802 back then, and I didn't know that. I'm like, is that good? I remember literally the bank manager came out and was like, who's the one with the 802 credit score? That was it. Because I was like 23 at the time, so they couldn't believe it, right? And then recession happened. I ended up losing my job, my teaching job, because it was a nonprofit-based school and they lost their funding. And I couldn't pay for my mortgage anymore. I ended up losing it to foreclosure. And I had not checked my credit in a while because I wasn't looking to buy a house and I wasn't looking to buy a car or anything. And so me not checking my credit in a while, I was using my credit score as an example in a class I was teaching about. Here is a great website where you can check your credit score for free. I should have checked my credit score. Imagine. I'll never live this down. So I'm pulling up the credit, the site, showing everyone, and this is where you can check. It said a 547. I was like, wait, what? This must be the wrong. It's another Tiffany Alice in Newark, New Jersey, who has the same Social Security number as mine. So, yes, it was a 547. I didn't know because I don't know why I didn't think of that because of the foreclosure. It went from an 802 to a 547. And a friend of mine who was a bankruptcy lawyer gave me this trick about raising my credit score quickly, and I did. It took me about a year. And so the trick is that you are going to have if you have a credit card that has a zero balance, I actually had two of them. And I put a small amount on each card. So you could just do this with one. So Netflix, for example, $9. And so I put the credit card with the zero balance in the middle of this automated transaction. So normally I was paying Netflix from my bills account. Netflix, bills account, Netflix, bills account. I put the credit card in the middle. And I said, hey, Netflix, charge this credit card that has zero balance, the $9, bills account, pay the card. Netflix, charge the card, bills account, pay the card. And I did that with two cards. And in about a year, despite having a foreclosure, I was at a 750. And now I'm back in the 800s. And so because it's not about the amount that you're paying off each month, it's about the habit of paying off each month. And so you can kind of trick your credit score into raising fairly quickly if you pay something off in full every single month. It can be $5, you know? And so literally, I call it my Jump Like Jordan card. I took that card and I left it home. So I let that transaction play out by itself. The key, you have to be very mindful, because in the beginning, I was paying off the card too soon. So you're wanting to have the card charged and then checking, when is my statement date? Just look on your credit card statement, meaning like when have they basically told the credit bureaus, Tiffany has used the card. You know, your statement date means they're issuing the date, they've acknowledged that you used the card. So that way, they will also acknowledge that you paid it off. If you paid it off too quickly, they didn't even get a chance to tell anyone that you used the card. You see what I mean? All right, so doing that, like putting a credit card between the transaction, paying off a credit card in full every single month, you know, and then putting that card away is really going to help to raise your credit score. Got it? Good. All right. So another thing with credit is if you know someone with great credit, like myself, you can become an authorized user. So I did this actually for my baby sister, Lisa. She called me the other day, and she asked me if she could be an authorized user on one of my cards. So here's what's so great about being an authorized user. So I put Lisa on one of my cards that had a $30,000 limit, but I wasn't using it. So what it looked like was I was using like maybe, I don't know, I think that is my Jump Like Jordan card. So maybe just Netflix is on that card. So what it looked like is that when I charged that card $9 a month and paid it off every month, it looked like Lisa was charging it and paying it off every month. So she got to inherit my good behavior without having to do anything good, because that's what little sisters do, right? You see, I'm a little bitter being the older sister. You last borns. Who's the last born in here? Mm-hmm. Right? And so, but being an authorized user is great. So here's the thing. Let's just say if I misuse the card and I use it and then I don't pay it, so they might at first come at Lisa, but she can just show she's an authorized user, not a co-user, a co-borrower of that card. So really, she's not going to be responsible for the bills on that card. But if I use it irresponsibly, it will reflect. Because at one point, I remember I'd used it a lot. She's like, what are you doing with our card? I'm like, our card? Lisa. So yes, becoming an authorized, so if you have a grandma, so you're wanting to do this obviously with someone that you know closely, because you have to, like, so what I did was we called into the bank together, and I said, I'm adding Lisa to be an authorized user. I want to make sure that this is going to show up on her credit report, because just because you're an authorized user doesn't mean that it will. And they said, okay, we'll make sure that happens. And she gave them her social security number, like, or whatever number that she, yeah, her social security number to be added onto the card. And like I said, now Lisa, like, I'm using the card. I'm not issuing Lisa a card, because technically, as an authorized user, I could issue Lisa a card, but who's doing that? Not me, right? So that's what the good thing is. So if you're trying to convince your grandma, you can let her know, you don't have to issue me a card. I just want to inherit your good behavior. Now, here is the thing to be mindful of. I remember a friend of mine did this. She got on her grandma's card. Her grandma's in her 80s. The card, 35 years old. My friend, 30 years old. So they were like, oh, so you had a card when you were negative 5 years old. How amazing, right? So you want to make sure, too, that the card history is in alignment with your age, or it doesn't look, you know, right, obviously. All right? Got it? Good. Take this picture. Not me. Although you could take me if you like. No. So these are important components of your credit. The five components of your credit score, 10% inquiries. Every time you go to your favorite shop and they say, hey, would you like to open up a credit card? What they're really saying is, would you like to lose anywhere from 8 to 30 points? Don't do it. Two, type of debt. They just like to see a mix, you know, like you've got a car loan, you've got a student loan, or you've got credit card debt. The truth is, the older you get, the more seasoned you get, you're just gonna have that naturally. 15% length of credit history. I keep my oldest credit card open. It's an average. So if you've got a 10-year-old card and you just open up a new card, you went from 10 years credit history to 11 divided by 2, 5.5 years credit history. Do you see? It's an average. So the more new cards you open up, the shorter you're making your credit history. 30% amounts owed utilization. So this is the sneaky secret of why your credit score might not be what it is. You pay your debt on time. I'll give you an example. My husband, when I first met him, it was like date 3. I was like, oh, this was a great date. What's your credit score? I was like, I didn't know how to ease it in. I'm like, we're just going to ask. And he was like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, well, you know who does know? This free website. Last 4 digits of your social? And so it wasn't that great. It was like a 620 or something like that. It was, eh. And so I said, do you know why it is that way? He was like, honestly, no. He didn't have any outstanding bills or outstanding debt. He only had one credit card. It was a secured card. And it was a $500 limit, and he was using $450 of it. And I was like, well, why are you using so much? He was like, no, I charged it up so I can make small payments a month so I can show I know how to make payments. I'm like, that's not how that works. Because his utilization was too high. He was almost maxed out. When your utilization is over 30%, you are dragging down your score, no matter how much you're making payments. So if you have a $100 limit on your card, a balance over $30 is potentially dragging down your score. And it's usually an average of your cards. So you've got one card, you're not using it all. You got another card that's maxed out. You have a 50% utilization of average. So when you tell yourself, I don't even use this card, I'm going to close it. Now you have 100% utilization. Do you see? So you want to be mindful about closing cards. Do the math. So you want to stay under 30% ideally. You know, especially if you're looking to buy something or purchase something, if you're looking to buy or purchase a house, you want to stay in the 15% range, 10 to 15% range. So your utilization is a sneaky reason why, even though you might be paying everything on time, your credit score might not be that great. 35% is payment history. Do you pay what they ask? Do you pay when they ask? 35%. That's why I said paying your bills automatically from your bills account is going to be your BFF. Okay? And this is just the FICO score range. Like anything, when your friend, if your friend has an 800, I do, and they're like, ah, I have an 800. If you have a 750, you're both getting the same interest rate. 750 is the beginning of A-plus credit. So it's the beginning of perfect credit. So if you have a 750 and they're buying a house and they have an 800, they're going to offer you the same interest rate. So people kill themselves to get an 800, but you don't really need to. Once you get over 750, you're fine. All right, got it? You took your picture? Good. All right, let's talk about debt really quickly. Unexpected money. So unexpected money, I like to call it UM, is any money you receive outside of your paycheck. So baby Lisa finally pays me back, that's unexpected money, because who expects to get paid back by the baby? I see y'all last born. You don't pay back, right? It's your birthday, it's Christmas, it's the holidays, whatever that kind of looks like, you know? So any money that you don't receive from your normal paycheck, right? So what you can do with that is put it toward bills. You know how I said when I was at Target, I like to make that transfer really quickly to buy the dress that I want? You could do the same for bills or debt. So when I receive unexpected money, Lisa gives me back the $20 she owes, Grandma gives me $100 for my birthday, whatever that is, I can literally take that money and make a transfer from my phone to the debt that I'm currently paying off, right? And so it's a great way to instantly do kind of like the reverse of overspending. Is you get unexpected money, you weren't expecting it, do something with it. Because if you don't put money somewhere, it will decide for you, right? So I get $100 here, I put $100 into that credit card I'm paying off. I'm out with my friend, and I was about to pay my $35 for lunch, and she says, no, I got it. You're like, I knew I should have got the lobster, right? They always wait till you order the chicken to treat. Right? That $35 that you didn't have to pay, now you can make the transfer from your phone to that debt that you're paying off because it was money you were going to spend anyway. Right? So these are just quick little things. I hope you could tell that these are things that you can do now. Right? These are not these big overtures. These are decisions that you can make now, small choices that you can make now to make the most of your money. Got it? Good. All right. So I do this free challenge every year. About 700,000 women have signed up for one or more of them. This is one of my favorites. It's called the Net Worth Edition. And so I walk you through step by step how to create your net worth by earning more and increasing your assets and paying off debt, which is decreasing your liabilities. And so you can sign up for free. I've been doing it for 5 years. And this one you can sign up at lrcnetworth.com. And if you want any of the checks, there's 5 of them, any of the challenges, it's just at liveritualchallenge.com. So take a quick picture if you need. But it's just a great way because every day, it's basically an online course where every day I give you a really simple task to your email inbox that walks you through step by step to a higher net worth. All right. Homework. Oh, you thought? No. Homework. I told you I used to be a teacher. Take a picture of your homework. Number one, you're going to create a budget. I gave you your 4-step budget plan. Number two, you're going to open up a bills account. See, I have a little Spanish in me. Open up an online-only savings account. These are things you can do literally within the next 24 hours, so no excuses. Number four, automate a monthly credit card payoff. If you have a credit card that says zero balance, put something really cheap on it and pay it off every single month. Number five, become an authorized user if you so desire and you know someone who's got really great credit. Number six, sign up for the Live Richer Challenge. And I'm actually going to send you a gift. So I just hit my, I'm admin, Michelle. So I've got a book called The 1 Week Budget because sometimes people just need a little bit more hand-holding when it comes to your budget. It's the foundation for your financial life. So I give away the first chapter for free, and as well as if you want a copy of this presentation, if you go to either thebudgetlisa.com right now and click contact, and just ask for watermark freebies, or just email Michelle at contact@thebudgetnisa, and just say watermark freebies, she will email you. I literally have it. I gave her template email. I was like, will people email you? Just send it back to them. So you get a copy of the presentation, a copy of the first week of this book, of the 1 week budget for free, and I'm gonna send it to you, okay? All right, we're gonna take some questions. Don't be shy, there's no judgment. This is a judgment-free safe zone, Yes, and then later, I have copies of my book, The Live Richer Challenge. I'll be signing books inside the convention hall. So yes, and then you have
Can
your
I
first.
Start
of course.
There are microphones up for everybody to line up if you have questions.
for Tiffany. I'd like to ask the first question. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest problem you find with people when they start budgeting? What's their first mistake?
People look at budgeting as deprivation, right? Who looks at it? Who's excited about a budget? Hardly anyone, right? Because you look at a budget, for the most part, as deprivation. And I believe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So when you look at a budget as your no plan, that's exactly what your budget says, no. But I like to look at my budget as my say yes plan. You know, words matter. So I look at my budget to say, hey, budget, how do I go to Italy? How do I get, you know, the car that I want? How do I get the house that I want? And so I look at my budget, and sometimes my budget will tell me, well, if you make this change and this change and this change, you're able to do so. Or if you were to say, you know what, if you cut off cable for 3 or 4 months, that's your Paris budget right there. You see what I mean? And so that's what I find when it comes to budgeting, is that people don't want to do it because it feels like deprivation, and it doesn't have to. Yes.
Do you have any recommended places to go and look for good budgets to follow if somebody doesn't have the concept of how to create a budget?
Would you look at that? The 1 week budget book. Yes. I wrote a book called The 1 Week Budget.
Actually, I see it right.
Yes, I'm going to send it to you. I'm going to send you at least the first chapter. So if you, like I said, if you email Michelle at contact@thebudgetnista.com and ask for it, I'm going to actually email you the first chapter for free.
Okay.
You know, because it is my, I really feel like I've been created to teach, to serve, to give.
Okay.
And I know that budgeting can be hard without the hand-holding.
Right,
and
right.
So that's exactly what it, because I mean, like I said, I used to be a preschool teacher, so I write from the perspective of year 3 and 4 when it comes to budgeting.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Questions? Yes.
So I wanted to let you know I appreciated the story about your father. I'm of Nigerian descent, too. So
okay.
I've been budgeting since I was 5.
Yeah, that's what they have. You see, that's what Nigerians do since you were 5.
That's what we do. So the question that I had for you then was on the slide that talked about separate to see.
Yes.
So you talked about having the bills account and then having your bills automatically come out of that. Where would you recommend us to have our direct deposit from work? Because I think that's, I got a little bit confused
okay.
on that part.
So it's like, I want you to think of it as a symphony, right? And so money is coming into your life from work before it, or like maybe a cycle, I don't know. Money is coming in from work. Before it reaches you, it should go off to a retirement account. So typically your job has some sort of retirement, 401k, 403b, right? So here's the cycle, right? Coming in, wait, some of it goes, ideally 10% or more goes into your retirement account. The rest of it lands into your deposit / spending account. That's the account that you currently have with your debit card, right? So it lands there to be told what to do, right? So it lands in that account. Some of it goes to your bills account. Right? And you'll look to see, you know, if you get paid every 2 weeks, then you put 2 weeks worth of bills into your bills account. Okay. Then some of it goes into an emergency fund. It might be 100, 200, whatever amount of dollars you think will go into the emergency fund. Then some of it is going to go into your money bucket, your long-term savings. Right? What is left in that initial deposit account is now your spending. Because guess what? Savings been saved, emergency taken care of, bills taken care of, retirement taken care of. This is your spending money attached to your debit card. Okay. So do you see the loop?
Yep.
Right? So if you do that, then, because what happens now is when you're like, I mean, I remember door swipe or no swiping, right? So when you're out there swiping with your card, you don't have to worry, am I spending bills, am I spending savings, am I spending emergency? All of that has been removed from you. You are now in like a safe little playpen of the money that's on this card can be spent. If you want to buy 100 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or Beyonce tickets, it's your business because everything's been taken care of.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
Hi. I'm looking for some tips and tricks for married couples. We have separate checking accounts that are direct deposits from work come into. And I do a lot of the household buying. And my husband is always, oh, we have lots of money. And I'm like, oh, no, we don't.
Oh, he must know my husband.
So just any quick tips?
We actually just had like a talk about this. You know, when those talks where you're like, honey, that's not what we agreed upon. Right? So this is what we do. And it's helpful. I mean, it's not perfect, but this is what's helped for us. So we do a mix of combined separate. So the bills account that I have now, that used to be my bills account, is now our bills account. So he contributes to the bills account, I contribute to the bills account. And the bills account takes care of now household things. So before it used to be like, I grocery shop, then you grocery shop. But like, I grocery shop, you know, I spent $200-$300. I'm like, $150. You didn't buy any meat. So, you know, now it's my turn, and now I have to, you know, so now the grocery shopping even comes out of the bills account. So basically, it's not even bills, it's basically like the household account.
Okay.
So that way, all like our joint money is for joint things, right? And then we each have our own separate savings account. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, we can save for specific things that we want, you know, and then we also have a joint savings account for things like a house or maybe a car or things like big things that we wanted to purchase together. Mm-hmm. And then we each get allowance. So, you know, we've set it aside like amount of money that we'll get every pay period as allowance. So like, so that way if he's got new Jordans on, I'm not mad because I know that one, it didn't come from the bills account. One, it didn't come from our savings. He has his own savings, so that must have come from his allowance. He could do whatever he wants with it. Without, I'm not worried about the household finances because of that. So a joint bills account, a joint savings, and individual allowances.
So, so that, the allowance accounts aren't individual.
Those are either, those are my checking. Mm-hmm. So basically, that your initial checking account that you have now with your debit card, that's why I keep my allowance.
Okay.
Yeah. So that I don't have to say, hey babe, do you mind if I buy?
Yeah.
Because it's my money to do so. If I could save up $2,000 worth of my allowance and get something huge, and he might look like, where'd you get that money from? Like, well, I haven't spent it in like 2 months because it didn't come from bills, it didn't come from savings, it didn't come from anything that's taking care of the household. You see, so that helps a lot. Also, too, it's like so you can see it. Mm-hmm. Because you know, when we both look in the bills account, we can see what's going on. So it helps. I mean, so try that. And ultimately, when it comes to marriage and money, you have to work out your own system because you might make significantly more. He might make significantly more. And so it might look different, you know? Like, I make significantly more than my husband. So really, he contributes to the bills account more than I do, and I contribute to his savings more than he does. You see what I mean? So you kind of like make that shift work for you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so this is similar, and I don't want this to turn into like relationship advice, but when do you recommend talking about income with a partner? So I'm in a heterosexual relationship with a man who makes, I'm assuming, significantly less than me just because of his line of work. He's very noble and works really hard.
That's my move.
I'm in tech. So
yeah.
Anyway, we are planning on moving in together in the summer, but I literally don't know how much he makes and he doesn't know how much I make, but we're going to need to have that conversation. So you were joking, right, about checking your partner's credit score, who now became your husband.
Like, oh no, I was not joking.
Yeah. Maybe you weren't joking.
I did ask him. Well,
So I feel, especially as a woman, I feel like I'm always dancing around this thing and, When do we talk about
this?
Well,
if you're talking about moving in together, because, I mean, we moved in together, sorry mom, sorry dad, before we got married, right? And
same.
So you might,
we will be.
Right? And so we had, in the beginning, when we were before we got married, we didn't really join money in that way. We just kind of did, like, this 50-50, like, when it came to the household, you know? And then once we got married, that's when we had, like, this other system kind of built. So you don't necessarily have to ask him, you know, what he makes, but you can decide, you can talk about, so how are the bills going to be handled? Okay. Do you want to do 50-50, or do you want to take the rent, I take the cable, the this, the that, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And asking about that, so that's probably what I would start off with, is like, how are we going to pay, because that's a real question, you know?
Yeah.
How do you want to pay the bills? Because my husband's the same thing. He is like a blue-collar worker, really hard, really noble, but the truth is, I'm an entrepreneur, and I probably make about 10 times more than him.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, I mean, that's just the reality for women these days, if you're, you know, in a heterosexual relationship. So many of us are making much more, so then you decide, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, do I not marry or date someone because they make significantly less than me? And I'm like, no.
No.
You know, or else you're probably not going to date that much.
That's true.
But it doesn't mean that you can't create a system where it makes everyone feel honored and important. Like, it was him that said, Tiffany, I want to pay the bills in the household.
Okay.
And so that's why most of his check outside of his savings and his allowance goes to the bills account.
Okay.
You know? So it's like, okay, so when the bills are paid, he's like, I paid those bills. And then even though technically I might be contributing more because I'm putting the money that I bring in outside of my allowance and my personal savings into our savings account.
Yeah.
You know? But visually, it makes him feel better knowing I pay the bills.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well then, my money goes into savings for us. Yeah. And so, but creating, you want to create a safe space where no one feels like you make more, so that means that somehow you bring more to the table.
Yeah.
Because that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
And so that's just also working that out. Communication is important. And asking him, because I'm a little bossy, asking him, how do you want to do? Because in my mind, I was like, we're going to do this. We're going to have it like this. And he was like, actually, this is how I'd like to do it. So being open, just having that conversation now.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Ooh.
Have you heard of the Mint Budget app?
Yes.
I use that. Do you have any thoughts on that? I feel like it helps me separate everything and see exactly where my money is going to, because I just connect all my accounts to it.
I've heard, honestly, I have not used it because I'm a budgetista. I'm like an Excel spreadsheet paper kind of girl. But honestly, I've heard really good things about Mint, because it does make it, it helps you to automate that system. It helps you to see. So yeah, I've never heard anything bad about it. So.
Okay. And then my other question is, so I'm only 21, so my credit ranges it goes right around 750, but the main thing is the time of credit. So do you have any suggestions for getting that up? It tells me I've only had credit for 3 years since I turned 18, but I can't get any higher because I haven't had it long enough.
Oh,
do you have any suggestions for that?
Live longer.
Baby.
That's it. That's what it is. You just have to live longer. And also too is try not to open up new credit. So decide, now is a good time to decide, is this the travel card that I'm using? Is this the whatever credit that you have, especially your credit cards, decide, do I really like these cards? Because anytime you open up something new, you're going to chop down your credit history.
Airline miles. Mm-hmm.
So, exactly. So choose whatever card you're going to stick with for a while and just continue to use them and really try not to open up new credit. And it will, that part, it's only, 10% of your score? No, 15% of your score is length of credit history. It's not a huge component. Credit is like your GPA. It is the grades. It's all of your grades for the last 2 years in particular. That's what really makes up your credit score, all your financial grades. And so if you just continue to do the right thing, it's going to raise eventually. And 750, remember, that's the beginning of perfect credit. So what that means is that anything above that is just like icing on the cake. It's not necessary. You've got to get the same interest rate as an 850 person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Now that we've talked about marriages and let's go beyond that.
Okay.
in the need it, love it, like it, want it,
yes.
And kids.
Okay.
and how all of those costs fit into the need it, love it, like it.
Yeah.
Because
you have children?
Because especially little kids, mm-hmm. they're not going to understand the difference between needing it and liking it.
But you can, I'll show you, this is what I used to do with my preschoolers. And this is 3 and 4.
Perfect.
And this is that how old your child is?
I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
The 5-year-old is in college, the 3-year-old is in high school. I remember those things. You're like, what did I just said that. I don't, So anyway, this is what I used to do. Because they say, Miss Tiffany, can you buy me? Aha, mm-hmm. uh-huh. Not Miss Tiffany, can I have? Can you buy me? Everyone thinks that 3 and 4-year-olds are too little. They already got it. They said buy. That means they understand there's a connection with money and the stuff that you just got. They don't know where the money came from, and honestly, they don't care, right? So this is what I did. And this is something that, this is an activity you can create for your young ones, is that in preschool, if you have, almost every preschool classroom has jobs, right? So it's just a little chore, you set the table, you help me put down the cots or whatever, but I made them to actual jobs. I got Monopoly money, and they had their little chart, and instead of getting a star, if they did their job, they would get a dollar from Monopoly money, or $1 if they did it, $2 if they did it well, $0 if they didn't do it at all, right? And so, because you want to start getting them in this thinking realm of when you do something, there is a financial reaction if you do something, and they loved it. We created savings boxes. This is something you could do with your little ones too, from shoe boxes, mm-hmm. cutting out little pictures of things that they want to potentially save for, put it on a shoe box or a coffee can, and put their little money into that savings box, which you're going to call a bank, so they start understanding the words, right? Because a little boy told me one time, when I told him I didn't have any money, he said, go to the wall. I'm like, the wall? And we went for a walk, by an ATM. Oh, the wall! Finally, Miss Tiffany! Go get some money! Because that's what kids believe, right? But so you want to start using those words, you just got paid. We're going to put it in your bank. Mm-hmm. And then from there, teaching kids about, from there, they used to be able to purchase things in our school store with their Monopoly money, bank money. And some things were $30, some things were $1, some things were $5. So they could start to understand, do they have enough they not have enough? But do you see these like fun activities could start really to get them thinking? So the kids stopped asking me to just buy them stuff. They understood that I had a job, just like they did at school, that I got paid, just like they did at school, and that I might not have enough in my bank, just like they did at school. So do you see having those kind of activities, you allow the activity to teach. Mm-hmm. So then when you have conversations, when you're at the store, so now I've got a 12-year-old bonus daughter. But when I first started dating my husband, she was 6. And so we would go to the store, and he would just buy her doll just because we were there. I'm like, I'm sorry, is it her birthday again? Because yesterday must have been her birthday, too. You can tell she loved me in the beginning.
We might be married to the same
person. Right? So what we started doing was, like, so she would get money from her aunts or whatever. She had her, like, real money. She had her piggy bank that I had her separate into 3 sections, her saving section, her giving section, and her spending section. So we would put money in each, and when we went out to wherever, Walmart, Target, whatever, I would say, Alyssa, you know, she would say, oh, I can't wait, I want to buy something from the store. I said, well, let's go see what's in your spending section. If there's a dollar, that's your budget. I use the word budget. If it's $10, that's your budget. She would bring it with her, and that would be her budget. If there's nothing, that's your budget. So it helped her to see next time she's more conscious, like, I know we're going to go here on Saturday. Let me put some more money in my spending part of my piggy bank because I know I'm not going to have the budget. And then watching her navigate, because Staples was her favorite, watching her navigate, I've got $5, but this thing I want costs $3, and this thing I want costs $3. That's $6. I don't have enough. What should I do, Tiffy? I'm like, something's got to go back. You know? So watching her navigate, she actually enjoyed. You'd be surprised. Kids love autonomy. You think that they're going to be mad because they don't have enough money? They enjoy figuring out, how do I make it work? So she, you should see her with her little calculator, like, well, if I do this, how much is tax again? You know? And so now she's a little budgetista. You know? So having those kind of conversations and activities when they're little is really going to help to set them up to think about money in a way that's not scary. Because that's how my dad raised me. I'm not afraid of money because we talked about it all the time. So talking about it in an age-appropriate way, creating fun activities to do things like that for, to having a budget when you're out with them, you know, because kids are going to want stuff. That's okay. You have a $2 budget, hold your dollar. That way, if you lose it, well, guess you're not getting anything when we go to the store. Learning responsibility, you know. And it is hard. And some days you're just going to be, just give it to them. And that's okay, you know, but, like, creating that kind of environment is really going to help you to raise financially healthy kids.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, one more. I think one, maybe two more. Let's see.
Hi, so I'm a new professional. I started my job, first job, like 6 months ago.
Congrats.
Thank you. And so I grew up in a house where we never talked about sort of like household money. Both my parents were self-employed, so like retirement accounts, not a thing. Investing, like definitely not a thing. Mm-hmm. And so now as I'm starting my career and like I'm starting to like have my own salary and having to make my own decisions, like I realized that's a lot more that I never even thought about mm-hmm. because we never talked about it, like retirement accounts and like investing. And then anytime you talk to someone about it, there's 20 different options yes. and 10 different opinions, and no one agrees on what is right.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if you had any good starting points for sort of starting to understand like the longer term planning of budgeting mm-hmm. and like with like sort of like good descriptions of how these affect you long term, like the nuances of both and kind of how to pick what might be right for you.
So it is hard because you're right, everybody has different. So ideally, you know, you're going to want to probably start contributing. Your job has a 401k, I'm assuming, right? Asking if they have an index fund. This is a good place to start. An index fund is basically a fund that mirrors a market, right? And so let's just say the S&P 500. So that's just basically like top 500 stocks in the United States, right? And so if you have a fund, an index fund that mirrors that market, this is what the stock market looks like. It looks like if a kid was drawing a lightning bolt. You know how kids draw lightning bolts? They look like this, right? And so the stock market historically goes up. But on its way up, it dips. It goes up, down. But you see it's still going up even as it's going down. So if you, especially at your young age, put your money in an index fund, your money, too, will go up a little bit down, but go up a little bit down, and it will still be going up even as it dips. So by the time you're ready to retire, you have started here, but you'll be here even with the dips if you don't take your money out. So it's like a great place to start because you can open up an index fund yourself, you know, or at your job asking, do I have the option of an index fund here? It's just a great easy place to start for kind of like beginning investing, where it's kind of like a set it and forget it. And then sitting down with a financial professional, Prudential's here, you know, and saying like, you know, because there's other things besides just basic retirement. You might want to be thinking about investing for wealth. You might want to think about, what about my parents as they get older? You want to think about insurance. Like, these are financial questions. So that's just a great little set it and forget it. But then also sitting down with one particular person that you can grow with. Think about your retirement professional as like your doctor, you know? Like, I remember I had a doctor once and he was like 80, and I was like, I don't think this is a good idea. Because I'm like 20, you're not going to, you know, this is not. So now my doctor's about the same age as I am, because I want to be able to grow together with my doctor. Same thing with your financial professional. So, because there are going to be varying degrees or varying conflicting advice that you get, but you want one person that you really can trust to sit down with and really sitting down and creating a life that you want with them. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, and a great book, so John Bogle, B-O-G-L-E. That, like, he's got great books on investing on Amazon. Like, I like his theory of investing. You
okay.
know? Mm-hmm. So that's John B-O-G-L-E Bogle. I would look them up too.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. We'll just take one more.
Yep. I know we're up against it, so I'll be quick. So as it relates to the budget and the spending accounts and the bills accounts, et cetera, what advice do you have for someone who's in a situation where your bonuses that come annually quite exceed your salary,
okay.
right? And so I've always struggled with that. I mean, doing it for 20 years, and it's always like there's this time of year where you're like, oh, God, I'm going to have money again when I get that big bonus. So what's the best way to kind of sort that out so I don't have these sort of stressful periods throughout the year?
So do the bonuses, if you never got a bonus because you afford your life?
No, because my bonuses are like 3X.
Okay. No, I'm just asking because I was going to say, if you could, I'd be like, well, put that baby in retirement.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a differentiation. It's like.
So before your bonus comes, you pretty much know what it's going to be. I would create my plan. How much is this, am I going to put in savings? How much am I going to invest? How much am I going to put in an account that's going to help me pay my bills?
Okay.
So you actually might put your bonus, like, let's just say, just for the sake of you get $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. And you need $50,000 of it to last you the year for living. So the other 50, you're gonna save and invest the other 50. This 50, now I'm gonna be my own employer. I'm gonna put 50 into a online only savings account or some sort of account that's gonna give me some interest, maybe even a CD or whatever, and then let it pay me monthly a salary on top mm-hmm. of what I'm already making. You see? Because when you look at a lump sum of money, it's very easy to nickel and dime it away. So I would put it up and allow it to kick out money to me every month. So some of your money, like I said, depending on how much you need for the year, that's what you're going to put up and let it pay you like it's your employer. And then the other, you're going to invest and you're going to save.
Almost like pre-fund the bills.
Yes.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
So that way you don't spend it all. All right. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed. I hope to see you in the conference room, right? No, convention hall.